Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off. It's better
over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge. Just to name a few, but if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, M-I-D-I.
On behalf of everyone whose story could only be written in the greatest nation on earth, I accept your nomination to be President of the United States.
The entire week was building up to that moment when Vice President Kamala Harris accepted the Democratic Party's nomination as its candidate for the White House. But so much else has happened in and around the political gathering, and we're looking to the headlines and beyond this weekend. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. Chicago played host to the Democratic National Convention, something it last did in 1996, and by most accounts, it was a success for the city. Party leaders feel it was pretty good for them, too. Just ask the delegates. Illinois State Comptroller Susana Mendoza was upbeat on the convention floor on the final night.
I feel it. You know, I really do. I'm I've run many races. I've won most of them, lost a couple, and there's always this kind of like feeling you get. And I feel like this is ours to lose. Now, you can't be overconfident. I feel really good about it, very optimistic. But we cannot slow down. As Coach Walt said, we rest when we're dead. For now, it's about getting Kamala Harris elected and leaving everything on the table to make sure we do it.
Seated all the way across the delegation from Mendoza, outgoing Cook County Clerk Iris Martinez was equally high-spirited.
I am just so overwhelmed and just thrilled with all the emotions about knowing that we could make history by electing our first woman of color, you know, and our first woman to the presidency, and I have to be here for this moment too, in my lifetime, to see this.
Seated next to her was 10th District Congressman Brad Schneider, also in good spirits and thoughtful.
First of all, it's been an extraordinary week, capping an extraordinary month. It's just the beginning of what's going to be 75 days to victory in November. But what we've seen this week, Chicago at its very best. Weather like it is all year round. It's a beautiful city, shining as bright as it ever has. And we've welcomed people from all over the country to celebrate nomination of the first African-American woman to be the President of the United States. And you're seeing unity within our party, and we're talking about unifying our nation to make sure that Kamala Harris and Tim Walz succeed in November and lead our country to a much better place.
Then there's Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky, who's not only optimistic but heavily involved in working to mobilize the party's campaign to get out the votes.
Absolutely. Well, I think the good things are going to happen. I think we have really set the stage now for Democrats to win, to make history ultimately as the President of the United States, the first black woman, but which is not the most important thing, but it's pretty darn important.
For years, Schakowsky has held women's empowerment luncheons, so this particular campaign is quite personal.
Oh, absolutely. When you say break the glass ceiling, I think it feels empowering to women across the country. The excitement, the optimism is just pretty overwhelming, which I'm so happy about. There's so much hope, and so women everywhere. Plus, there's concrete things like abortion rights that can be restored. And, you know, I have to tell you, I'm going for the trifecta, for the House, the Senate, and the White House. And when that happens, we'll restore the rights of women. We'll protect the rights of the LGBTQ. We will protect the rights of people of color to make sure that everyone can benefit from this administration. I'm so excited about it.
She acknowledges that concern for down-ballot races was another factor in people pressing for President Biden to step aside and in his decision.
Well, we have the least productive session of Congress ever right now with the Republicans in charge. And everybody knows how long it took to get a speaker, and then they can't pass their own bills. And it really isn't the fault of the Democrats. They can't agree with each other. So I think people are ready to move forward. And, you know, for a long time, it was fear that was driving us because we knew we had to beat Donald Trump. And now it's we can change the world. You know, if we win all of it, the trifecta, we will usher in the most progressive era in the United States of America that we have ever dreamed about. So I think that's how people are feeling. I know in my case, in the district, people are volunteering. They're signing up. We have OperationSwingState.com, people who want to go to Wisconsin and Michigan can go there and to sign up. We have had hundreds of people already going there. Young people want to get involved. And if people want to involve themselves in other states, we'll give them, they don't have to travel. They can make phone calls. Everybody can participate.
This was a convention like no other. Seriously, I mean, when have you ever seen a hip-hop roll call of the states complete with a DJ and dancing?
Our convention host, Illinois, how do you cast your vote?
Secretary, Illinois Democrats are doing the work to win in November, and I am proud to introduce my partner in the fight, my governor, J.B. Pritzker!
The great state of Illinois, the Prairie State, home of four presidents, including President Barack Obama. The birthplace of skyscrapers and the adopted home of Superman. The cornerstone of the Midwest Blue Wall. The first state to ratify the 13th Amendment ending slavery. And the 19th Amendment granting women the right to vote.
But there are some concerns that are always there, like demonstrations and security concerns. Public officials were very concerned about the former because of protesters' predictions And then the headlines made some people attending the convention worry about the latter. My colleague WBBM's Brandon Eisen handles that part of the story.
In the months leading up to the Democratic National Convention, Chicago Police Superintendent Larry Snelling had taken a hard stance on what his expectations were from demonstrators, promising that his officers would provide protection for the peaceful exercise of First Amendment rights, while also providing protection for residents and those visiting Chicago for the DNC in official capacity, by taking swift action to mediate any non-permitted or unlawful gatherings. With the tough talk from Snelling, along with protest organizers anticipating tens of thousands of people joining to demonstrate within sight and sound of Democratic Party leaders throughout the week, and many of those who plan to participate passionately lending their numbers to speaking out against the Israel-Hamas war and its effects on the Palestinian people in Gaza, there had been widespread expectations that we could see a repeat of what took place in 1968 when Chicago hosted the Democratic National Convention. Back then, peaceful Vietnam War protesters were beaten and arrested downtown and in Grant Park in what has at times been dubbed a police riot. The reality of what we saw in Chicago during the 2024 DNC was a great deal of restraint from the Chicago Police Department, its individual officers, and demonstrators, with well-organized communication and even cooperation coming from both sides of the protest line. We started the week Monday on the west side of Chicago near the United Center in Union Park, where a coalition of nearly 300 groups gathered for a rally before marching through the streets just outside the DNC security perimeter. We asked organizers then about their internal messaging when it comes to engaging with police and respecting the physical barriers that had been placed around the United Center. Spearheading much of the demonstration activity in Chicago this past week and over the past 10 months is the U.S.-Palestinian Community Network. Mohammed Sankari is one of the group's lead organizers in Chicago.
Well, generally what we tell folks is don't engage with the police. Really don't engage with anyone outside of our march. We made our route public. The city made the route that they said public. And so, you know, if you looked at our route, you would know that we're not trying to jump any barriers or anything else. But we're intent on marching our route.
And we hear this same message of conflict avoidance coming from other groups in the coalition to march on the DNC. Based in Minneapolis, Rachel Storm is with the Minnesota Abortion Action Committee.
Well, I mean, we're here to keep ourselves safe. You know, we're not trying to get into confrontations with the police. We're just here to exercise our First Amendment rights. You know, gather. We have a constitutional right to protest, and we're here to do that. We have a permit from the city, and that was especially important because we do want, you know, elders and children and people who are more vulnerable to be able to come to this protest and participate and exercise their rights to voice their desires and give voice to their constitutional rights. Police crimes are a real issue, and that is an issue that we are aware of, and, you know, bodily autonomy is what we're fighting for, and bodily autonomy does also mean freedom from police violence. But at the same time, we want people to be safe. You know, we're not trying to get our people hurt. We're trying to keep our people safe, and that's why we have marshals, and that's why we're looking out for each other at this march.
Now, when Rachel mentions marshals, these are people hired by protest groups to not only protect demonstrators from outside agitators, but to also self-enforce any participants that might attempt to stray from the approved route or agreed upon boundaries for any given march or demonstration. They are often tasked also with identifying and removing individuals who may be working against the group's intentions of peaceful demonstration. Many protest organizers profess that these marshals are good enough at what they do that police resources aren't necessary when it comes to protecting demonstrators or the areas outside any given rally, protest, or march. It's this claim that also lends to the feeling among organizers that even when police are deployed with the specific purpose of upholding their First Amendment rights, that the large presence of officers is actually just there in some sort of antagonistic capacity, hoping to make arrests, which over the years, especially in Chicago, just simply isn't true in most cases with CPD. And really for the DNC, we saw almost an exaggeration of police officers going out of their way to protect demonstrators on a number of occasions. And while most of the representatives in the coalition to march on the DNC we speak with give clear intent of abiding by the rules in place, a few aren't as willing to draw such a clear distinction. Noor Oda is with Code Pink, a feminist anti-war organization.
I mean, you know, we're here to protest and to march, and I think historically it's not, you know, something that you necessarily, like, need permission for. Like, we're protesting already, like, policies and actions that we don't agree with. So, you know, but we did win a lot of what we wanted, so I think that we are going to be able to make the best with what we have, so it should all work out fine.
Another question that we did ask at Union Park, with all the hype concerning expectations of a 1968 repeat and that sort of antiquated police response to protesters, if standing their ground meant arrest, were they willing to go to jail for the cause? Many answered yes, adding that if they were arrested, it would not be because they failed to follow the rules. It would be from some type of police overstep. But some said that they weren't necessarily prepared to commit to that kind of experience.
Not really. I mean, I got to be to work tomorrow. I'm an attorney. I have a hearing at 9 a.m. in Fort Wayne.
Sam Jarjar lives in Fort Wayne, Indiana. He took the day off from work, bringing his two young sons to participate in the march on the DNC. We asked if he would have their back if they were arrested.
So I told you at the beginning of this, I'm an attorney. And I've told them from the beginning that I would never represent them if they got involved criminally in the criminal justice system, with this exception. If they're exercising their First Amendment rights, I'd be, and they did nothing wrong and they weren't vandalizing or destroying property, and they were merely exercising their First Amendment rights and they were punished for doing that, of course I'd support them.
There were, of course, a few instances where protest-related arrests were made during the DNC, but many of these several dozen arrests came from clear violations, such as breaching the steel security fencing around the perimeter of the DNC on day one, and one small protest outside the Israeli consulate on day two that had been clearly organized by one specific group as a way to provoke a response from Chicago police. Even so, arrests were handled swiftly with minimal use of force, the majority of arrests being made on day one and day two of the DNC. The National Lawyers Guild had placed dozens of trained legal observers at these demonstrations and released a full report on Friday. The total number of DNC protest-related arrests Sunday through Thursday night, as reported by the NLG, is 76, most of which resulted only in municipal citations for disorderly conduct. Several people were charged with misdemeanors. Four felony arrests were made. At least four protesters required hospital treatment. That number confirmed by both the NLG and Chicago police officials.
Yeah, I think the DNC, I think it's a good thing. It brings revenue to the community. Yeah, that's it.
Vanessa Morgan, born and raised on the West Side, just blocks from the United Center, begins our look at how some neighbors reacted to the DNC activity footprint. Morgan joined us on a walk around the tall steel fencing along the DNC security perimeter, where at the DNC delegate entrance near the intersection of Madison and Polina, we discover what had developed into a sort of free speech midway. The entrance outside the steel fence, lined with various individuals and small groups, sharing their views on a number of religious, human, and animal rights issues. Morgan tells us that she was happy to see peaceful demonstration this week, and that she even welcomed the excitement. She was even inspired to share with us what's on her mind.
My opinion is, really, why can't we agree to disagree? Why is there war anyways? What's the need for war? What does it prove? What does it solve?
But not all nearby residents took well to the imposing steel fence barriers, traffic headaches, and absence of their regular parking, and limited access to a small neighborhood park during the last week of summer for CPS students. Some neighbors, withholding their names, shared their real thoughts on this.
They protect more of the United Center than they do the actual residents. Like, here it is, they blocked off all these different avenues to protect them and not enough of us. Protesters come in, they protest where our kids should be playing. They should be freely enjoying themselves. Instead, they have to be in the backyards playing with chalk or what have you, because they're fearful of what's going on. They're hearing loud noises, screaming, and whatever rights that the people have, they have it. However, I do believe that if this was in a different community, it would not have went this route. They wouldn't have allowed certain things. And so I feel like as a community, our community needs to come together better. But however, they need to start to give us more information as it is given to them, and in an accurate amount of time, and just let us know what exactly is happening in our communities. That's not okay. Again, everyone have their free rights, and they can protest what they so desire. But like I said, if it was in other communities, it would not have been allowed. definitely not the parking. All of these things are big issues to the community, so it's unfair that the people that's actually paying, we pay full rent here, not able to actually access our parking, have like visitors come over and things like that. And I do understand that it's the Democratic National Convention that's going on. However, it's interfering and interrupting with the actual community that actually had a lot of things that's going on already. And they're bringing more focus to the community now. However, when we need them here on a daily basis to focus on real live issues, they're never here. So that's my bigger issue.
And we heard this same sentiment from others as well, especially when it came down to its impact on the neighborhood children.
Kids are not in school right now, so it's like they just enjoying stuff. And like it was said before, like, kids really don't know what's going on, so it can cause like fear, it can cause like just the discomfort of it all.
The DNC is over now, to the relief of many West Side residents, but again, there were others who didn't seem to mind the disruption, even a little excitement as demonstrators marched past their doors.
It's just unbelievable how people get together for things that they believe in. And it's a good thing. To me, it's a good thing.
Julia lives in the West Haven Park building at the corner of Lake and Walcott. We spoke to her as thousands of demonstrators made their way under the L tracks on Lake Street, right past her doorstep on the last night of the DNC. A wall of Chicago police officers between her and them. She says in addition to not feeling any sense of fear from the demonstrations this week, that in her opinion, Chicago police did an excellent job of keeping the peace.
They've been awesome. They have been awesome. They have been patient. They have been alert and keeping us safe and very respectful to the protesters.
That was WBBM News Radio's Brandon Eisen reporting on how Chicago police and the community dealt with the demonstrations during the Democratic National Convention. You're listening to WBBM's At Issue, and I'm Craig Delamore. This weekend, we're going behind the headlines to give you a deeper look at the people and issues of the DNC. Here's a fun fact. Most delegates don't arrive very early to the evening sessions of the convention, but do you know what happens early? Walkthroughs and sound checks. So you might spot a president checking out the teleprompter, or in this case, Grammy and Oscar-winning recording artist John Legend and percussionist Sheila E. playing from the Prince songbook. Let's go! Just a preview of what's to come. Speaking of what's to come, there's the campaign itself. A lot of delegates were feeling confident because this convention seemed to have a very high energy level. People are excited. I spoke with veteran Chicago State Senator Mattie Hunter about that, and she has some interesting insights. Senator Hunter's had her job since 2003, but she was politically active way before that. At an Illinois delegates breakfast, I asked her about her gut feelings about this campaign.
Well, my experience this week has been truly, truly amazing. You know, pulling all the Democrats leaders in the state together here in Chicago. I've had the opportunity to run into some of my colleagues around the country who are delegates, and they're involved with the DNC. And I've served in the Senate for 22 years, and I know people all over the country, and everybody's so excited. They're ready to get to work. You know, they want to do some groundwork, you know, voter registration, knocking door to door. You know, they're ready for it. You know, we've been looking for this change for a very, very long time. We needed somebody else that was sane and doing something different. You know, and then everybody complains about the low turnout in the primary elections and the general. Well, people are tired of the same old, you know. Their conditions are different from other folks' conditions. So when Joe Biden decided to step aside, and he did a great job, don't get me wrong, I'm not criticizing him at all, you know, and he did a fabulous job. It's just that, by Kamala coming in, it was like a shot in the arm that the entire country, not the black community or the Indian community, but the entire country needed a shot in the arm. And I believe that she gave it to us.
And I've been hesitating to ask this question in this way, but I keep getting some of the feeling that we had in 2008. Are you getting any of that vibe?
I'm getting some of it. But you know what I'm relating this to today? Harold Washington. That's on the level of the momentum that I am seeing. Okay? I'm involved in about 6 to 8 different women groups for Kamala. And I stay on these virtual calls practically one every day, every night, you know. And folks from all over the country, they want to raise monies, they want to get out there and they want to work, they want to do this or they want to do that, you know. That's, I'm telling you, that's the level that I see this momentum on.
You know, I think having been, my first time in Chicago was in 1983.
That's when I first met you.
That was, again, like you said, it wasn't African American. It was, remember, that was the Rainbow Coalition. That was
same thing that's going on now, right? And then I don't know if you remember, Craig, but remember when many of the black parents and other parents, they said, "Well, Harold Washington, I don't know if we want to vote for him," and this and that. The children, the little children, the kindergartens and the first and second and third graders. Remember, we had these big old barrels on the streets for Harold?
Yeah.
Those kids were pouring their piggy banks, monies in the piggy banks in those big barrels. So they wanted to contribute, you know, because the call had gone out that we need money. And these kids said, "Well, I got a piggy bank I want to give. I want to help Harold Washington." I see this momentum. The same thing is going on.
But do you worry that this momentum will be, you know, sustained? Are you worrying that?
Well, I think that in order to sustain it, we're going to have to keep the people informed. You got to keep them involved. You know, you got to keep motivating them. We got to listen to them. Okay? We got to listen to them. They tell us what they want. We got to listen. And then when you listen, you have to take that information. You got to start making change in that direction. Then they'll begin once again to believe in politicians. But right now they don't. Because many politicians did not keep their word. Many politicians they didn't talk to them. You know, they think that elected officials think that just because we're elected officials, we make the decisions. No. My constituents call me in Springfield, and they send emails and text messages. Do not vote for House Bill or Senate Bill, blase, 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 because it's going to hurt, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I listen to them. Now, if I know that they got misinformation, I'll try to correct them. But if not, I have voted against them. But most of the time, I vote their direction. That's why I'm still in office, Craig. I've never had anybody to run against me in 22 years.
And finally, a story about a popular performer using their vibrant voice to rally young voters during the Democratic National Convention. My colleague Rachel Pearson found them at McCormick Place.
From her appearances on season 6 of RuPaul's Drag Race and season 3 of All Stars, drag queen Ben de la Creme is no stranger to attention. But she was in Chicago this week to turn the spotlight away from her campy performances and onto younger voters.
Our real intention this election is to get Gen Z more engaged in the political process and to get them registered to vote and get them to get out the vote.
Ben de la Creme is one of the co-founders of Drag Pack, the first political action committee founded by famous drag queens all across the country. She met with several Gen Z voters and even Gen Z delegates at the DNC, but says more often than not, that age group feels disconnected from the political process.
They don't necessarily understand when there's a political system that makes them feel disenfranchised and it doesn't necessarily relate to them, it doesn't apply to them. I think it's really inspiring to see that there are folks who are not just involved on a voter level, but are actually working through the system and started just exactly where they were, scrolling through TikTok wishing things were different.
The drag community's risen into public view in the last several years thanks to reality TV and social media, but their involvement in the political landscape is often overlooked. Ben de la Creme says part of her mission is to underscore the connection between drag and politics.
Drag queens oftentimes have been at the helm of the queer liberation movement. Most of us know that drag queens and trans women were at the helm of the Stonewall riots. That really is what a lot of people sort of attribute the beginning of the movement to. But we've been involved before that. We've been involved since. And oftentimes that is just by necessity because we don't have an option. When you are the sparkliest target in the room, leaving the house is a political statement. So we have always been involved and we can choose to either take control of that involvement or let it take control of us.
And for Drag Pack, the stakes in the upcoming election are clear.
The queer community, of course, has gained a lot of freedom and protection in the recent decades, but that was very, very hard won. And it is, as we've seen with Roe versus Wade, none of these things are guaranteed. And the 500 plus anti-LGBTQ plus bills that were, you know, being pushed forward in the last year, flooding the lower court system, only one needs to make it to the Supreme Court. And we saw that with Roe versus Wade as well.
Ben Delacreme says ultimately it's up to young voters to get involved, do their research, and help shape the country's narrative.
And our success happens when we all recognize that we can't just be focused on one issue. We have to take in the landscape, and we have to support each other. We have to hold each other's burdens so we can all make it through.
That was WBBM News Radio's Rachel Pearson reporting there. I thank her and our colleague Brandon Eisen for their work this week. To our listeners, if you want a copy of this program or to hear it again, please visit our website at WBBMNewsRadio.com. You can also find our podcasts on Audacy.com. I'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Delamore, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off. It's better over
here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the markable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
On behalf of everyone whose story could only be written in the greatest nation on earth, I accept your nomination to be President of the United States.
The entire week was building up to that moment when Vice President Kamala Harris accepted the Democratic Party's nomination as its candidate for the White House. But so much else has happened in and around the political gathering, and we're looking to the headlines and beyond this weekend. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. Chicago played host to the Democratic National Convention, something it last did in 1996, and by most accounts, it was a success for the city. Party leaders feel it was pretty good for them, too. Just ask the delegates. Illinois State Controller Susana Mendoza was upbeat on the convention floor on the final night.
I feel it. You know, I really do. I'm very, very, you know, I've run many races. I've won most of them, lost a couple, and there's always this kind of like feeling you get. And I feel like this is ours to lose. Now, you can't be overconfident. I feel really good about it, very optimistic, but we cannot slow down. As Coach Walt said, We rest when we're dead. For now, it's about getting Kamala Harris elected and leaving everything on the table to make sure we do it.
Seated all the way across the delegation from Mendoza, outgoing Cook County Clerk Iris Martinez was equally high-spirited.
I am just so overwhelmed and just thrilled with all the emotions about knowing that we could make history by electing our first woman of color, you know, and our first woman to the presidency, and I have to be here for this moment too, in my lifetime, to see this.
Seated next to her was 10th District Congressman Brad Schneider, also in good spirits and thoughtful.
First of all, it's been an extraordinary week, capping an extraordinary month. It's just the beginning of what's going to be 75 days to victory in November. But what we've seen this week, Chicago at its very best. Weather like it is all year round. It's a beautiful city, shining as bright as it ever has. And we've welcomed people from all over the country to celebrate nomination of the first African-American woman to be the President of the United States. And you're seeing unity within our party, and we're talking about unifying our nation to make sure that Kamala Harris and Tim Walz succeed in November and lead our country to a much better place.
Then there's Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky, who's not only optimistic but heavily involved in working to mobilize the party's campaign to get out the votes.
Absolutely. Well, I think the good things are going to happen. I think we have really set the stage now for Democrats to win, to make history ultimately as the President of the United States, the first black woman, but which is not the most important thing, but it's pretty darn important.
For years, Schakowsky has held women's empowerment luncheons, so this particular campaign is quite personal.
Oh, absolutely. When you say break the glass ceiling, I think it feels empowering to women across the country. The excitement, the optimism is just pretty overwhelming, which I'm so happy about. There's so much hope, and so women everywhere. Plus, there's concrete things like abortion rights that can be restored. And, you know, I have to tell you, I'm going for the trifecta, for the House, the Senate, and the White House. And when that happens, we'll restore the rights of women, we'll protect the rights of the LGBTQ, we will protect the rights of people of color to make sure that everyone can benefit from this administration. I'm so excited about it.
She acknowledges that concern for down-ballot races was another factor in people pressing for President Biden to step aside and in his decision.
Well, we had the least productive session of Congress ever right now with the Republicans in charge. And everybody knows how long it took to get a speaker, and then they can't pass their own bills. And it really isn't the fault of the Democrats. They can't agree with each other. So I think people are ready to move forward. And, you know, for a long time, it was fear that was driving us because we knew we had to beat Donald Trump. And now it's we can change the world. You know, if we win all of it, the trifecta, we will usher in the most progressive era in the United States of America that we have ever dreamed about. So I think that's how people are feeling. I know in my case, in the district, people are volunteering, they're signing up. We have OperationSwingState.com, people who want to go to Wisconsin and Michigan can go there and to sign up. We have had hundreds of people already going there. Young people want to get involved. And if people want to involve themselves in other states, we'll give them, they don't have to travel. They can make phone calls. Everybody can participate.
This was a convention like no other. Seriously, I mean, when have you ever seen a hip-hop roll call of the states complete with a DJ and dancing?
Convention host, Illinois, how do you cast your vote?
Secretary, Illinois Democrats are doing the work to win in November, and I am proud to introduce my partner in the fight, my governor, J.B. Pritzker!
The great state of Illinois, the Prairie State, home of four presidents, including President Barack Obama. The birthplace of skyscrapers and the adopted home of Superman. The cornerstone of the Midwest Blue Wall. The first state to ratify the 13th Amendment ending slavery. And the 19th Amendment granting women the right to vote.
But there are some concerns that are always there, like Illinois demonstrations and security concerns. Public officials were very concerned about the former because of protesters' predictions. And then the headlines made some people attending the convention worry about the latter. My colleague WBBM's Brandon Eisen handles that part of the story.
In the months leading up to the Democratic National Convention, Chicago Police Superintendent Larry Snelling had taken a hard stance on what his expectations were from demonstrators, promising that his officers would provide protection for the peaceful exercise of First Amendment rights, while also providing protection for residents and those visiting Chicago for the DNC in official capacity, by taking swift action to mediate any non-permitted or unlawful gatherings. With the tough talk from Snelling, along with protest organizers anticipating tens of thousands of people joining to demonstrate within sight and sound of Democratic Party leaders throughout the week, and many of those who plan to participate passionately lending their numbers to speaking out against the Israel-Hamas war and its effects on the Palestinian people in Gaza, there had been widespread expectations that we could see a repeat of what took place in 1968 when Chicago hosted the Democratic National Convention. Back then, peaceful Vietnam War protesters were beaten and arrested downtown and in Grant Park in what has at times been dubbed a police riot. The reality of what we saw in Chicago during the 2024 DNC was a great deal of restraint from the Chicago Police Department, its individual officers, and demonstrators, with well-organized communication and even cooperation coming from both sides of the protest line. We started the week Monday on the west side of Chicago near the United Center in Union Park, where a coalition of nearly 300 groups gathered for a rally before marching through the streets just outside the DNC security perimeter. We asked organizers then about their internal messaging when it comes to engaging with police and respecting the physical barriers that had been placed around the United Center. Spearheading much of the demonstration activity in Chicago this past week and over the past 10 months is the U.S.-Palestinian Community Network. Mohammed Sankari is one of the group's lead organizers in Chicago.
Well, generally what we tell folks is don't engage with the police. Really don't engage with anyone outside of our march. We made our route public. The city made the route that they said public. And so, you know, if you looked at our route, you would know that we're not trying to jump any barriers or anything else. But we're intent on marching our route.
And we hear this same message of conflict avoidance coming from other groups in the coalition to march on the DNC. Based in Minneapolis, Rachel Storm is with the Minnesota Abortion Action Committee.
Well, I mean, we're here to keep ourselves safe. You know, we're not trying to get into confrontations with the police. We're just here to exercise our First Amendment rights. You know, gather. We have a constitutional right to protest, and we're here to do that. We have a permit from the city, and that was especially important because we do want, you know, elders and children and people who are more vulnerable to be able to come to this protest and participate and exercise their rights to voice their desires and give voice to their constitutional rights. Police crimes are a real issue, and that is an issue that we are aware of, and, you know, bodily autonomy is what we're fighting for, and bodily autonomy does also mean freedom from police violence. But at the same time, we want people to be safe. You know, we're not trying to get our people hurt. We're trying to keep our people safe, and that's why we have marshals, and that's why we're looking out for each other at this march.
Now, when Rachel mentions marshals, these are people hired by protest groups to not only protect demonstrators from outside agitators, but to also self-enforce any participants that might attempt to stray from the approved route or agreed upon boundaries for any given march or demonstration. They are often tasked also with identifying and removing individuals who may be working against the group's intentions of peaceful demonstration. Many protest organizers profess that these marshals are good enough at what they do that police resources aren't necessary when it comes to protecting demonstrators or the areas outside any given rally, protest, or march. It's this claim that also lends to the feeling among organizers that even when police are deployed with the specific purpose of upholding their First Amendment rights, that the large presence of officers is actually just there in some sort of antagonistic capacity, hoping to make arrests, which over the years, especially in Chicago, just simply isn't true in most cases with CPD. And really for the DNC, we saw almost an exaggeration of police officers going out of their way to protect demonstrators on a number of occasions. And while most of the representatives in the coalition to march on the DNC we speak with give clear intent of abiding by the rules in place, a few aren't as willing to draw such a clear distinction. Nor Oda is with Code Pink, a feminist anti-war organization.
I mean, you know, we're here to protest and to march, and I think historically it's not, you know, something that you necessarily, like, need permission for. Like, we're protesting already, like, policies and actions that we don't agree with. So, you know, but we did win a lot of what we wanted, so I think that we are going to be able to make the best with what we have, so it should all work out fine.
Another question that we did ask at Union Park, with all the hype concerning expectations of a 1968 repeat and that sort of antiquated police response to protesters, if standing their ground meant arrest, were they willing to go to jail for the cause? Many answered yes, adding that if they were arrested, it would not be because they failed to follow the rules. It would be from some type of police overstep. But some said that they weren't necessarily prepared to commit to that kind of experience.
Not really. I mean, I got to be to work tomorrow. I'm an attorney. I have a hearing at 9 a.m. in Fort Wayne.
Sam Jarjar lives in Fort Wayne, Indiana. He took the day off from work, bringing his two young sons to participate in the march on the DNC. We asked if he would have their back if they were arrested.
So I told you at the beginning of this, I'm an attorney. And I've told them from the beginning that I would never represent them if they got involved criminally in the criminal justice system, with this exception. If they're exercising their First Amendment rights, I'd be, and they did nothing wrong and they weren't vandalizing or destroying property, they were merely exercising their First Amendment rights, and they were punished for doing that, of course I'd support them.
There were, of course, a few instances where protest-related arrests were made during the DNC, but many of these several dozen arrests came from clear violations, such as breaching the steel security fencing around the perimeter of the DNC on day one, and one small protest outside the Israeli consulate on day two that had been clearly organized by one specific group as a way to provoke a response from Chicago police. Even so, arrests were handled swiftly with minimal use of force, the majority of arrests being made on day one and day two of the DNC. The National Lawyers Guild had placed dozens of trained legal observers at these demonstrations and released a full report on Friday. The total number of DNC protest-related arrests Sunday through Thursday night, as reported by the NLG, is 76, most of which resulted only in municipal citations for disorderly conduct. Several people were charged with misdemeanors. Four felony arrests were made. At least four protesters required hospital treatment. That number confirmed by both the NLG and Chicago police officials.
Yeah, I think the DNC, I think it's a good thing. It brings revenue to the community. Yeah, that's it.
Vanessa Morgan, born and raised on the West Side, just blocks from the United Center, begins our look at how some neighbors reacted to the DNC activity footprint. Morgan joined us on a walk around the tall steel fencing along the DNC security perimeter, where at the DNC delegate entrance near the intersection of Madison and Polina, we discover what had developed into a sort of free speech midway. The entrance outside the steel fence, lined with various individuals and small groups, sharing their views on a number of religious, human, and animal rights issues. Morgan tells us that she was happy to see peaceful demonstration this week, and that she even welcomed the excitement. She was even inspired to share with us what's on her mind.
My opinion is, really, why can't we agree to disagree? why is there war anyways? What's the need for war? What does it prove? What does it solve?
But not all nearby residents took well to the imposing steel fence barriers, traffic headaches, an absence of their regular parking, and limited access to a small neighborhood park during the last week of summer for CPS students. Some neighbors, withholding their names, shared their real thoughts on this.
They protect more of the United Center than they do the actual residents. Like, here it is, they blocked off all these different avenues to protect them and not enough of us. Protesters come in, they protest where our kids should be playing. They should be freely enjoying themselves. Instead, they have to be in the backyards playing with chalk or what have you because they're fearful of what's going on. They're hearing loud noises, screaming, and whatever rights that the people have, they have it. However, I do believe that if this was in a different community, it would not have went this route. They wouldn't have allowed certain things. And so I feel like as a community, our community needs to come together better. But however, they need to start to give us more information as it is given to them and in an accurate amount of time and just let us know what exactly is happening in our communities. That's not okay. Again, everyone have their free rights and they can protest what they so desire. But like I said, if it was in other communities, it would not have been allowed. Definitely not the parking. All of these things are big issues to the community. So it's unfair that the people that's actually paying, we pay full rent here, not able to actually access our parking, have like visitors come over and things like that. And I do understand that it's the Democratic National Convention that's going on. However, it's interfering and interrupting with the actual community that actually had a lot of things that's going on already. And they're bringing more focus to the community now. However, when we need them here on a daily basis, to focus on real live issues, they're never here. So that's my bigger issue.
And we heard this same sentiment from others as well, especially when it came down to its impact on the neighborhood children.
Kids are not in school right now, so it's like they just enjoying stuff. And like it was said before, like, kids really don't know what's going on, so it can cause like fear, it can cause like just the discomfort of it all.
The DNC is over now, to the relief of many West Side residents, but again, there were others who didn't seem to mind the disruption, even a little excitement as demonstrators marched past their doors.
It's just unbelievable how people get together for things that they believe in. And it's a good thing. To me, it's a good thing.
Julia lives in the West Haven Park building at the corner of Lake and Walcott. We spoke to her as thousands of demonstrators made their way under the L tracks on Lake Street right past her doorstep on the last night of the DNC. A wall of Chicago police officers between her and them. She says in addition to not feeling any sense of fear from the demonstrations this week, that in her opinion, Chicago police did an excellent job of keeping the peace.
They've been awesome. They have been awesome. They have been patient. They have been alert and keeping us safe and very respectful to the protesters.
That was WBBM News Radio's Brandon Eisen reporting on how Chicago police and the community dealt with the demonstrations during the Democratic National Convention. You're listening to WBBM's At Issue, and I'm Craig Delamore. This weekend, we're going behind the headlines to give you a deeper look at the people and issues of the DNC. Here's a fun fact. Most delegates don't arrive very early to the evening sessions of the convention, but do you know what happens early? Walkthroughs and sound checks. So you might spot a president checking out the teleprompter, or in this case, Grammy and Oscar-winning recording artist John Legend and percussionist Sheila E. playing from the Prince songbook. Let's go! Just a preview of what's to come. Speaking of what's to come, there's the campaign itself. A lot of delegates were feeling confident because this convention seemed to have a very high energy level. People are excited. I spoke with veteran Chicago State Senator Maddie Hunter about that, and she has some interesting insights. Senator Hunter's had her job since 2003, but she was politically active way before that. At an Illinois delegates breakfast, I asked her about her gut feelings about this campaign.
Well, my experience this week has been truly, truly amazing. You know, pulling all the Democrats leaders in the state together here in Chicago. I've had the opportunity to run into some of my colleagues around the country who are delegates, and they're involved with the DNC. And I've served in the Senate for 22 years, and I know people all over the country, and everybody's so excited. They're ready to get to work. You know, they want to do some groundwork, you know, voter registration, knocking door to door. You know, they're ready for it. You know, we've been looking for this change for a very, very long time. We needed somebody else that was sane and doing something different, you know. And then everybody complains about the low turnout for in the primary elections and the general. Well, people are, they're tired of the same old, you know. Their conditions are different from other folks' conditions. So when Joe Biden decided to step aside, and he did a great job, don't get me wrong, I'm not criticizing him at all, you know, and he did a fabulous job. It's just that by Kamala coming in, it was like a shot in the arm that the entire country, not the black community or the Indian community, but the entire country needed a shot in the arm. And I believe that she gave it to us.
And I've been hesitating to ask this question in this way, but I keep getting some of the feeling that we had in 2008. Are you getting any of that vibe?
I'm getting some of it. But you know what I'm relating this to today? Harold Washington. That's on the level of the momentum that I am seeing. Okay? I'm involved in about 6 to 8 different women groups for Kamala. Mm-hmm. And I stay on these virtual calls, mm-hmm. practically one every day, every night, you know. And folks from all over the country, they want to raise monies, they want to get out there and they want to work, they want to do this or they want to do that, you know. I'm telling you, that's the level that I see this momentum on.
You know, I think having been, my first time in Chicago was in 1983.
That's when I first met you.
Yes. So, yeah, and that was, again, like you said, it wasn't African-American. It was, remember, that was the Rainbow Coalition. That was...
Same thing that's going on now, right? And then, I don't know if you remember, Craig, but remember when many of the black parents and other parents, they said, well, Harold Washington, I don't know if we want to vote for him and this and that. The children, the little children, the kindergartens and the first and second and third graders, remember we had these big old barrels on the streets for Harold?
Yeah.
Those kids were pouring their piggy banks, monies in the piggy banks in those big barrels. So they wanted to contribute, you know, because the call had gone out that we need money. And these kids said, well, I got a piggy bank. I want to give. I want to help Harold Washington. I see this momentum. The same thing is going on.
But do you worry that this momentum will be, you know, sustained? Are you worrying that?
Well, I think that in order to sustain it, we're going to have to keep the people informed. We got to keep them involved. You know, you got to keep motivating them. We got to listen to them. Mm-hmm. Okay? We got to listen to them. They tell us what they want. We have to listen. And then when you listen, you have to take that information. You got to start making change in that direction. Then they'll begin once again to believe in politicians. But right now they don't. Because many politicians did not keep their word. Many politicians they didn't talk to them. You know, they think that elected officials think that just because we're elected officials, we make the decision. No. My constituents call me in Springfield, and they send emails and text messages. Do not vote for House Bill or Senate Bill, blase, 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 because it's going to hurt, da, 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 da. I listen to them. Now, if I know that they got misinformation, I'll try to correct them. But if not, I have voted against them. But most of the time, I vote their direction. That's why I'm still in office, Craig. I've never had anybody to run against me in 22 years.
And finally, a story about a popular performer using their vibrant voice to rally young voters during the Democratic National Convention. My colleague Rachel Pearson found them at McCormick Place.
From her appearances on season 6 of RuPaul's Drag Race and season 3 of All Stars, drag queen Ben de la Creme is no stranger to attention. But she was in Chicago this week to turn the spotlight away from her campy performances and onto younger voters.
Our real intention this election is to get Gen Z more engaged in the political process and to get them registered to vote and get them to get out the vote.
Ben de la Creme is one of the co-founders of Drag Pack, the first political action committee founded by famous drag queens all across the country. She met with several Gen Z voters and even Gen Z delegates at the DNC, but says more often than not, that age group feels disconnected from the political process.
They don't necessarily understand when there's a political system that makes them feel disenfranchised and it doesn't necessarily relate to them, it doesn't apply to them. I think it's really inspiring to see that there are folks who are not just involved on a voter level, but are actually working through the system and started just exactly where they were, scrolling through TikTok wishing things were different.
The drag community's risen into public view in the last several years thanks to reality TV and social media, but their involvement in the political landscape is often overlooked. Ben de la Creme says part of her mission is to underscore the connection between drag and politics.
Drag queens oftentimes have been at the helm of the queer liberation movement. Most of us know that drag queens and trans women were at the helm of the Stonewall riots. That really is what a lot of people sort of attribute the beginning of the movement to. But we've been involved before that. We've been involved since. And oftentimes, that is just by necessity, because we don't have an option. When you are the sparkliest target in the room, leaving the house is a political statement. So we have always been involved, and we can choose to either take control of that involvement or let it take control of us.
And for Drag Pack, the stakes in the upcoming election are clear.
The queer community, of course, has gained a lot of freedom and protection in the recent decades, but that was very, very hard won. And it is, as we've seen with Roe versus Wade, none of these things are guaranteed. And the 500 plus anti-LGBTQ plus bills that were, you know, being pushed forward in the last year, flooding the lower court system, only one needs to make it to the Supreme Court. And we saw that with Roe versus Wade as well.
Ben de la Creme says ultimately it's up to young voters to get involved, do their research, and help shape the country's narrative.
And our success happens when we all recognize that we can't just be focused on one issue. We have to take in the landscape, and we have to support each other. We have to hold each other's burdens so we can all make it through.
That was WBBM News Radio's Rachel Pearson reporting there. I thank her and our colleague Brandon Eisen for their work this week. To our listeners, if you want a copy of this program or to hear it again, please visit our website at WBBMNewsRadio.com. You can also find our podcasts on Audacy.com. I'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Delamore, News Radio 105.9 WBBM. It's
better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you, and also accepts insurance. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events and the lesser told stories, ones you might not even know happened. Find History This Week on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.